This is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
Good afternoon. Some wins, some losses, and some insight into the economic headwinds farmers in Queensland are facing have been revealed in the federal budget. The industry has largely been exempted from some major tax reforms. There's billions for fuel and fertiliser supply, but also cuts to pest control grants and, of course, the confirmation that the Queensland leg of the Inland Rail has officially been scrapped. There have been some positives for agriculture. Farmers will be exempt from trust changes, and there's more money for chemical regulation and to tackle illegal fishing in northern waters. But the road funding's been described as a bit ho-hum, and there's plenty more to talk about. In a moment, you'll hear from the Federal Agriculture Minister, Julie Collins, in what she says is in the budget for farmers. And I'd love to hear from you today as well, 0487 993 222. If you've got a take you'd like to share, you can also send me an email, countryhour@abc.net.au. Jo Shepherd is the Chief Executive of the Queensland Farmers Federation, and she joins you for the Country Hour. Jo, how significant were the tax reforms for agriculture delivered in last night's budget?
So tax reform obviously has been central to this budget, and agriculture really strongly welcomes the federal government's recognition of the uniqueness of family farming enterprises, and particularly the acknowledgement of the legitimate use of trusts for purposes of succession planning and the generational nature of farming. So this has been very clearly recognised by the tax reform, with farmers being exempted from the changes to taxation of discretionary trusts. So we really welcome this recognition by the federal government. And it's important, Kaylee, not just for reforms that have been announced in this budget, but also underpinning future reforms, but we also did see the permanent extension of the instant asset write-off and the loss carryback scheme, which will potentially be useful for agriculture. But I think the significant piece there is the really defined carve out that's been provided for ag enterprises, which really clearly and appropriately acknowledges the uniqueness of farming businesses.
And speaking of those farming businesses, was there enough support, do you think, in the budget for the challenges they're facing right now, particularly when it comes to adapting to the extraordinary input costs they're facing?
Yeah, it's a really tough time for farmers, and I would say for most businesses at the moment, but for farmers in particular. You know, we've seen the increase cost of fuel, but also fertiliser, and, you know, uncertainty around accessing to very key inputs. We've also seen some farmers, particularly in the southern area of the state, now going into dry times. So really, really tough period for agriculture. But the budget has confirmed the $10.7 billion investment package to expand national fuel stockpiles. So that includes boosting strategic fuel reserves and also our refining capacity. So that's positive. However, what we can't see in the budget, and we are still doing some unpacking, but we can't see anything around targeted support packages for SMEs to address cash flow issues and ensure business continuity while we make our way through this fuel and fertiliser crisis, which is really disappointing because I think, we're hearing from farmers across Queensland who are really being challenged now by cash flow issues, the increased costs of those significant inputs, plus, a lack of confidence around, supply, not just now, but at critical times during your production period, is really giving a lot of farmers no choice but to make some pretty serious decisions around, whether they sit a planting season out or whether they plant half the farm, which obviously is going to have a big impact on the individual enterprise, but it's also going to have flow-on effects to the supply chain. So we were really hoping to see, some support, some targeted support for SMEs really to address that cash flow piece and to ensure business continuity, and not just for the benefit of the individual enterprises, but for regional economies, food security, and for the broader Australian economy. So that is a bit disappointing.
And speaking of that, I guess, you know, the availability of funding, we will see significant cuts to national pest and weed control programs in the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. Some of that funding will be redirected to what the government's calling other policy portfolios, including expanding trade and export opportunities. What's your takeaway from the proposed changes for the department's funding?
Yeah, I think, you know, the cuts to the department are quite significant, so that does concern us, and it is a bit of a red flag. It appears that the Regional Tech Hub initiative is not going to be supported moving forward, and there continues to be nowhere near enough funding allocated to feral animal control. So I guess it's a bit of a wait and see as to, you know, whether some of these vital services do, you know, end up sitting under another portfolio, but significant cuts. So I guess there is some concern around how that's going to transpire. We have seen, you know, the budget announced that there'll be an increase funding for CSIRO, disease preparedness initiatives. There is some increased support for border security, which is important. And I note the funding to support a concerted effort on yellow crazy ant control in the wet tropics and Townsville area. So there are some positives in there. But I think you know, significant cuts to the Department of Ag, which we're going to have to, I guess, wait and see, and hopefully work with the federal government on how that all plays out on the ground.
You're listening to The Country Hour, and Joe Shepherd is the Chief Executive of the Queensland Farmers Federation. Joe, that's the specifics, but the budget also gives us broader information about how the government is viewing the economic outlook. What did you take away from some of the best case scenario, I guess, forecasts that look pretty bleak when it comes to productivity?
I think, you know, exactly, Kayleigh. I think this budget sits amidst a very complicated backdrop, both domestically but also globally. There's ongoing concerns regarding the future outlook, which is really still heavily masked by uncertainty, inflationary environment and risk. So I think the fact that we're looking at a projected surplus situation being a whopping 9 years ago is also concerning. The budget is being called a budget repair budget. It is another deficit budget, albeit an improvement on last year, but this is largely due to a commodity windfall, which has delivered quite a significant net boost to the budget, but yet we're still in deficit. So I think, you know, business confidence, as we know out there, is, not strong. There's a lot of challenges ahead. And I think, some of the narrative in the budget certainly reflects that, and that's certainly what we're hearing, you know, from farmers across Queensland. I think we've got some challenging times ahead. Declining productivity obviously remains a critical problem, and industry, you know, we continue to call for and to try and work with governments at all level to achieve a significant reduction in red and green tape, to try and increase productivity and help industry and the economy ultimately do more with less, which is going to be important as we navigate these headwinds ahead.
And on that productivity question, there has been some discussion, and you did mention that there's still a lot of unpacking to do, but there has been some discussion around potential future reform of the working holiday program and the visa program in particular. Do you have any further detail that around that? It seems like there wasn't a lot of information last night.
No, the details are a little bit sketchy, but we are looking forward to hearing more around that. So they have pointed to reforms to the Working Holiday Makers Scheme, and that may provide agriculture some opportunities so long as these reforms complement the PALM scheme. So we do look forward to understanding this piece more, because as we know, workforce and skills shortages and challenges in that space continue to be an issue for agriculture. We're looking forward to hearing more about that.
Overall, what do you think this budget says about the mindset around food security from the federal government?
Yes, we obviously really welcomed the federal government doing some work in terms of food security. And from our perspective and the changes we're seeing in land use, particularly across Queensland, you know, food security needs to be front of mind and in every first discussion. I mean, the fact that we are now a net importer of dairy products is alarming. And if that, you know, if that fact alone isn't, drawing red flags across the country, I'm not sure what will. So it is disappointing that food security does not seem to feature in the budget. I know that, you know, throughout the different programs, it sort of, you know, is you could argue that it's supporting agriculture from a broader perspective, but I would have liked to have seen food security really clearly called out in this budget, and some specific measures that go to things like, you know, building resilience for farmers, water security for farmers, you know, clear land use change policy, and data to support those policy decisions, and of course continuity through this fuel, business continuity through this fuel and fertiliser crisis. So, yeah, I would have liked to have seen food security be really much more explicitly called out in the budget.
Jo Shepherd, thanks for your time on the Country Hour today.
Thanks, Kayleigh.
Chief Executive of the Queensland Farmers Federation, Jo Shepherd. Up next, you'll hear from Federal Agriculture Minister Julie Collins.
On your radio, online, and on the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
It's 16 past 12. I'd love to hear from you this afternoon. 0487 993 222. Has the budget changed anything for you? Maybe it's business as usual for you. I'd particularly be keen to know how you're feeling about the economic outlook. It does seem to be pretty bleak, even in the best case scenarios. Let me know your thoughts. 0487 993 222. You can also send me an email, countryhour@abc.net.au. Now, nearly $200 million will be cut over 5 years from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and Forestry, to be redirected towards other policy priorities within the portfolio. Now, some of that will go towards securing export and trade opportunities for agriculture, and about $56 million will go to border and fisheries authorities to monitor Australia's northern waters for illegal foreign fishing vessels, which also bring biosecurity threats. Warwick Long asked Federal Agriculture Minister Julie Collins what was in the budget for farmers.
Well, obviously the most important thing is supporting farmers in terms of the current situation we're dealing with in terms of the Middle East. You know, we know that this is impacting globally, and as a government we're doing everything we can do to shield Australians, including our farmers, fishers and primary producers, from the worst impacts of that. You saw that last week with a $10 billion announcement, $7.5 billion of which is about a fertiliser and fuel security facility to make sure that we can secure supplies of important inputs like diesel and fertiliser.
How quickly is that hitting the ground? What's the timeline on that investment?
Well, I was able to announce this morning, actually, that we have now secured under that investment 90,000 tonnes of additional agricultural grade urea, and that comes on top of the 250,000 additional supply that we secured from Indonesia that I announced just a couple of weeks ago. So that 90,000 is under that new arrangement.
So that's where the government effectively underwrites the boats to provide surety for the importers to bring the product to Australia.
That's correct.
The opposition's Darren Chester says you're picking winners and losers in fertiliser shipments, and the importers who aren't getting their boats underwritten by the government are simply going to stop ordering due to the risk from competitors. Does he have a point?
No, we're certainly working with them all, and certainly talking to the industry and people in the industry. They understand that we have prioritised obviously the biggest two, and then we're moving and working with other importers at the moment. So this has taken, you know, some time to get in place, but we've moved much faster than other countries, and it's put Australia in a good position in terms of our diesel and our fertiliser.
Yeah, so your door's open to the smaller importers.
Absolutely.
Let's talk then about some of those other changes. There is a major tax change coming for business trusts, but farmers have been exempt from that. Why?
Well, obviously on farm income, you know, what we want to do is work with our primary producers. As I said, we know that they're under pressure at the moment. So we've listened to them, and they've obviously welcomed us in terms of listening to them and some of the concerns that they had around, I guess, some of the rumoured changes without seeing the final detail last night. And what you've seen really from the sector is, having seen the final detail last night, that they are very pleased that the government has listened to them. And certainly, obviously, a lot of farmers also utilise the instant asset write-off, which which we're making permanent, which I know will be good news, and permanently introducing the two-year loss carryback for SMEs. So that's for people with a turnover up to $1 billion, I know, is also welcomed. So there's a fair bit in it. There's budget, as there always is.
And there is, in the budget papers, extra money for organisations like the APVMA getting an additional $8.7 million for next year. Is that to try and speed up some of the chemical regulation bottlenecks that have made their way into the sector?
Well, we've been obviously on a pathway of reforming the APVMA. What we inherited was, I guess, not ideal for Australian agriculture and certainly for those industries. And we've been on, a pathway of reform. And what this additional taxpayer funding does is allow that reform to take place at a pace and a rate. I guess it also recognising where industry is at. We've also obviously done that in terms of the full cost recovery for our exports too, and delayed that an additional year to 1 July 2027. So again, this is about us working with and listening to industry. They were some of the industry's asks and we've listened to them.
There is a $200 million cut to your department over 5 years. What's behind that? Why is there such a large cut to the bureaucracy for agriculture?
Well, obviously, right across government, this budget, we've really been focused on putting downward pressure on inflation, and we've been looking for savings in every portfolio. So what we're talking about here is some future uncommitted funds and some reprioritisation, and you've certainly seen that across the budget, with $68 billion in reprioritisations or savings. I think inflation really is the thing that hurts Australians and our farmers, and certainly that's what you have seen in terms of what we have been working on with the farmers right across a whole range of things. So
productivity and growth for an industry are also big concerns though too, right? Does a $200 million cut over 5 years to the Agriculture Department's budget affect those goals?
Well, certainly there's no on-ground programs or farmer-facing programs that we're talking about here. We're talking about future uncommitted funds and we're talking about, grant programs that haven't opened and things like that. We've been really careful to make sure that we shield farmers as much as we can. But certainly, when we listen to them and they ask for things, we certainly need to be able to, cut our cloth, as every department right across government is doing, to be able to pay for those things as people would expect us to do and taxpayers expect us to do, because we do need to deal with inflation, and what we've seen with the war is it will impact our inflation. So as a government, we're doing the responsible thing and taking some tough decisions, Warwick.
Pests, animals and diseases is an interesting part of your government approach, because there are two things going on here. There is increased biosecurity spending and a focus on biosecurity from your government, but you're also cutting the spend on the pests that are already here. $104 million cut from grant programs, including pest and disease preparedness and response programs. Is there a problem with funding pest control?
Well, what I would say, Warwick, is since our government has come to office, we've invested around $2 billion in additional biosecurity, understanding that, our biosecurity risks increase given, the changing climate, the increasing passenger and container movements.
Yeah, that's stopping things getting here. That's not killing the animals that are here.
We've got a total of over $400 million across the forward estimates to 2030 for nationally cost-shared pest and disease response programs. And obviously, the primary, responsibility in terms of pests and diseases is with states and territories and land managers, and we're working with them on that. And if we get any new incursions, we'll, go through the usual process in terms of that. Hopefully, because of our strength in biosecurity, that's not what happens.
But if there's budget cuts to things like pest control, doesn't that mean we're more likely to lose the battle against some of those pests that are spreading throughout Australia?
Well, there's no existing emergency response cuts to existing incursions. So let's be very clear about that. As a normal part of budget management, proportion of unspent or uncommitted funds, have been, taken as savings.
To farmers out there listening to this, obviously they've seen a pretty big structural budget to our tax system. Is this the end of it? Should they fear extra changes in budgets in the future?
Absolutely not. What they should know is that we'll continue to listen, as we have with this budget and we have in the past, and certainly, seeing our investments, whether they be in terms of international relationships and trade, whether it's in biosecurity funding, whether it's in sustainability and resilience in terms of some of the conditions our farmers face, we are listening and we're working with them.
That's Federal Agriculture Minister Julie Collins speaking to Warwick Long. And I've got a message through on 0487 993 222. It says, this government is a disgrace. As farmers, we are absolutely certain that these Labor activists are intent on destroying agriculture in this country and forcing consumers to buy low-quality Chinese products. It is criminal. That's one message through on 0487 993 222. You can share your view as well, or send me an email, countryhour@abc.net.au, and do pop your name on there so I can say g'day when you send that through. It's almost 25 past 12. Up next, you'll hear from AgForce with their take on the federal budget.
Before the sun rises, your local ABC team are starting their day getting ready to help you start yours. We're here to inform you as to what's happening with local news and events. ABC Breakfast, weekday mornings on ABC Local Radio.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour with Callie Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
Now, AgForce has welcomed investment in market access and agricultural exports, but the cuts to disease and pest management funding announced in the budget last night are concerning. AgForce President Shane McCarthy told Brooke Tindall that first and foremost, commitment to fuel certainty at this time is crucial.
Anything that will go further to securing our supply of fuel and fertiliser, the two most important things in agriculture, is we welcome anything to do with that. I mean, as it's been shown over the last, with the closing of the Straits and Hamas, and you know, the ability of us to get fuel and fertiliser, it's shown that we need a bigger stockpile of those, and to be able to get them and get them at a, not only be able to get them when we need them, but to get them at a price that is affordable.
And particularly on fuel, there is the $1.1 billion cleaner fuels program, which I know the sugarcane industry has been waiting for in terms of their biofuel production. There was a bit of a vague, message in terms of creating more demand for that biofuel. What were your thoughts on that?
Look, anything that we can do with the biofuels, obviously they're a cleaner and greener fuel source, but anything that can help those industries like the sugar industry that can clean up some of those, you know, the standover cane, so that, you know, producers are able to get a better return on their crops, you know, this year and next year. The biofuels, to me, just make sense. I don't understand why we don't spend more time trying to work out how we can get better biofuels.
Now, another positive that came out for primary producers was the small business tax settings being made permanent, like the $20,000 instant asset write-off. How will this benefit farmers in particular?
Oh, look, any of the little incentives like that, it helps. Any sort of benefits that producers can get in those terms, to be able to write something off helps. We work on fairly small margins as it is now, so anything that we can help to, increase what we're able to, because most of our profits go back into the farm for the next year. So to be able to do those sort of things is a boon for industry.
There was also the exemption for primary producers from that 30% trust tax. What were your thoughts on that?
I'd like to find more information out about it, and, you know, the ins and outs of it. While there's an exemption there for producers, I need to know there may be some perverse outcomes from that. It was something that government told industry that they needed to do to, help them, is to go into trusts. And it was an election promise that they weren't going to touch them, but then all of a sudden, it's back on the table. And while we welcome an exemption for industry, why was it on the table to start with?
And there were some cuts that came about for the ag industry, particularly there was $191.6 million removed from parts of the agriculture, fisheries and forestry portfolio, particularly programs like pest and disease preparedness. Are you concerned about that at all?
Absolutely. One of the non-negotiables that the ag industry has in Australia has as a wider thing is our biosecurity. It is something that we've spoken about in the past. It's non-negotiable. Our product is clean and green, and we need to be very, very vigilant in our biosecurity. There is foot and mouth and LSD just to the north of us. We do not need those diseases coming in. And as for pigs and cats and foxes and dogs, those ferals need to be controlled because they're the ones having an effect on primary production, and they're also having an effect on, they're the biggest threats to species of native animals, is those ferals that have, and they are getting out of control. The increase in pig numbers and foxes and cat numbers is absolutely incredible, that you now have got some local government, regional local governments looking at implementing cat bounties, which, obviously there's a problem there.
And it said that some of that funding will go towards market access and export for agriculture. What impact will this have on farmers?
Look, we always welcome some money being spend in that area on market access. The more diverse our markets overseas, we can't just rely on one market overseas. So the more diverse, the more markets we're able to sell our product in, the safer the industry will be. So, we welcome those money being spent in those areas that improving markets and trade.
And there were some other announcements, such as $8.7 million investment for the APVMA. What do you think that will bring?
We do use certain chemicals for our production, and that increases our production. And some of these chemicals are necessary to control and help us do what we do and produce better. So it just sometimes that needs to be better and improved, and money being spent in those areas to improve those type of, the right chemical for the right job, we welcome.
And particularly for rural areas, the regional tech hub lost some funding. Can you tell me your thoughts on that?
Look, the rural tech hub people do an amazing job. They're not a telco-based organisation, and they go around, especially in regional areas, and help get people the right service and the right tech in the right place. And not only can they help educate their kids, but they can also and connect to the outside world, but they're able to run their businesses with better connectivity. And the job that these people did in that regional tech hubs, I've seen firsthand, and it's just an amazing job that they do. So they don't seem to be have been funded, which is a great shame. And AgForce will be pushing forward to make sure somewhere along the line that they get funded.
And now we've obviously talked about things individually, but overall, what were your sort of, lasting thoughts on the budget?
Yeah, it's a real mixed bag, I would say. While there was some carve-outs for agriculture, and there's some good stuff in there for agriculture, possibly they've missed the mark on certain points as well. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, and over the coming days, we'll go through it and get a better understanding of what works and what doesn't.
AgForce President Shane McCarthy speaking to Brooke Tindall. It's almost 25 to 1. You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour. Up next, the forecast for the weather, not the economics, the weather from the Bureau.
A tray of cocktails floated at us through the twilight. Who was this Gatsby fella?
A jazz-soaked reimagining of the great Gatsby.
That's the best thing a girl can be in this world. A beautiful little fool.
Search for Gatsby in Harlem on ABC Listen.
This is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
It's 25 to 1. Remember, you can send me a message on 0487 993 222 or you can send me an email, countryhour@abc.net.au. I will get you the interim reports from Dalby, Charters Towers and Gracemere before 1 o'clock, and we will learn a little bit about a very clever farmer who decided that instead of buying a pub, they go into a slightly different side income stream. I'll bring you that story before 1 o'clock as well. For now, though, it's time for you to get the latest forecast from the Weather Bureau. Harry Clark's on duty this afternoon. How are you going, Harry?
Good afternoon, Kelly. Yeah, I'm really well, thank you.
Good to hear. So we're starting to see, that easing trend in the west when it comes to the rainfall?
Yes, we have seen that weak trough system sit through the far west of the state the last few days. It did bring around 12 millimetres to Birdsville in the last 24 hours to 9 a.m. this morning, which is not terrible for this time of year. Otherwise, pretty patchy and hit and miss falls of just 1 or 2 millimetres elsewhere across the Channel Country. But looking at the satellite this afternoon, we do see that cloud starting to break up a little bit. Probably still expect to see some further showers and thunderstorms, even potentially through places such as Boolya, Baduri, Birdsville over the next 24 hours, but really that system is on a weakening trend, as you mentioned, so going to be quite patchy and hit and miss for the next day and a half.
And then, I guess, a bit of a resurgence expected.
Yeah, that's right. So once we see the back end of this weather system, it'll only be, a brief dry out for the far southwest. As we are looking at a more substantial weather system tracking across the very far southwest or into the southwest on Saturday. Now, that weather system will take the form of a trough with an associated cloud band, so a fairly thick level of cloud right through the atmosphere, bringing some relatively widespread rain where it is, even the odd storm underneath it as well. Now that starts during Saturday in the very far southwest of the Channel Country, and a widespread 10 to 20 millimetres can be expected with that. Should be worthwhile noting as well, this won't just be in Queensland, it will extend all the way from Alice Springs down into western New South Wales as well. So a relatively significant weather system for, I guess, southeastern Australia. And as we go into Sunday, we will see that system spread more so into areas southwest of around Cloncurry to Quilpie. Once again, another probably 10 to even 30 millimetres relatively widespread across that area, which, once again, for this time of year is relatively unusual to have it in a widespread nature. And there's fairly good confidence in that rainfall for the southwest. It's got good moisture associated with it. It's a fairly dynamic system compared to the one we've had. So looking pretty good to get those rainfall totals. But then the general uncertainty increases from Monday or even Sunday evening as to what happens as the system shifts further east. Now, there is, I guess, a broad agreement that we will see showers and even some patchy rain areas spreading across southern inland Queensland on Monday, even into the southeast. So it could be a fairly broad system by Monday, but still not a huge amount of certainty on just how much rainfall we're likely to see out of it. So a lot of the modelling, suggesting some, moderate totals, which could be quite useful to very parched parts of the southern interior across the Darling Downs and the Maranoa and Warrego, of around sort of 20 to 30 millimetres on that Monday. But a handful of models still suggesting it will be less than that. So it's just a wait and see at this point as to how much rainfall that system brings as it moves east across southern and even southern parts of central Queensland, south around Blackall. Also worth noting, on the Monday, it looks like we will have a little bit of this system leaning back through the central west and even the northwest. So cloudy conditions can be expected there with some patchy showers and in patchy rain areas as well.
Are there any indicators of what would be the determining factor as to whether or not it did bring a bit more widespread on the Monday to those dry parts of the Maranoa, Warrego and Downs?
Yeah, so I guess all the ingredients are in place for the rainfall. We just need the trough to be in the right position. So the difference between the modelling that's saying good, healthy rain across broad parts is just how, I guess, how quickly they move that system east. So some of the modelling is lingering the system further west, and they're the models that have, not as much rainfall across those areas. But probably the majority of the other models are suggesting that whole system will transit east over that Monday period into Tuesday morning before pushing offshore. So I guess that's the one we can hope becomes, I guess, more dominant, and certainly probably the majority of the models at this stage do have at least moderate falls through areas particularly close to the New South Wales border through southern Queensland on that Monday in particular.
Good to know. We're watching for the position of that trough. How are things looking on away from that system for the rest of the state?
Yeah, so I guess in eastern Queensland at the moment, we're dominated by a very strong ridge of high pressure from a high near Tasmania with a central pressure around 1,040, which is pretty high. And that's leading to quite strong southeasterly winds through eastern Queensland, with a lot of marine wind warnings current at the moment, but also some scattered shower activity, particularly around the North Tropical Coast and the southeast coast. So we have seen the showers, although relatively coastal, bring around 5 to 15 millimetres in the last 24 hours at areas such as Innisfail, around the Proserpine region, and also through, I guess, coastal parts of the southeast, and we can expect to see that pattern continue for today, tomorrow, and even into Friday. So quite a persistent weather pattern in the eastern Queensland. Now, in the longer term, I guess we're watching for that trough system in the southwest that will be moving through to eventually bring some more widespread rain to inland parts of the southeast and in and central Queensland, most likely Monday. But once again, a bit of a watch and wait at this stage.
And just finally, for the coastal waters forecast, do things start to look a little better by the weekend?
Yeah, so I guess in the short term, we do have a very large amount of strong wind warnings current. So southeasterly winds right up and down the Queensland coastline, up to 30 knots, pretty much everywhere except for the Southern Gulf and the Gold Coast waters. But as we go into tomorrow, our ridge of high pressure does start to relax ever so somewhat. So the strong wind warnings will contract to just far northern Queensland waters, but generally fresh southeasterly winds up to 25 knots elsewhere. And then we'll probably see a little bit of a further easing into the weekend as that high pulls away to the east. So I guess windy in the short term, but becoming lighter as we head into the weekend.
Geez, we're working you hard today, Harry. Thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Harry Clark, the senior forecaster on duty for you at the Weather Bureau. And, of course, you'll get the latest weather information right here at ABC Radio. You can follow your favourite ABC Bureau, even the ones you don't like, on Facebook, and keep in touch with the Bureau's warnings on their website and their app as well. It's 18 minutes to 1. You are listening to the Queensland Country Hour, and I'd love to hear from you. 0487 993 222 is the number to send me a message, or you can email countryhour@abc.net.au. Up next, why one farmer chose not to buy the pub and instead do something a little clever with their crop.
There's no doubt that country music is bigger than ever right now. Join me, Outback Tom, as I get you around the artists that are blazing a trail. Listen to Country Club, Sunday night at 6 on ABC Country, or anytime you like on the ABC Listen app.
This is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
And I got a message here from Carol, who says she's just curious, as there are some rodent plagues here already, will biosecurity be ready if hantavirus gets here? Now, that's a really interesting question, Carol. There is a lot of work being done in that space. At the moment, the Australian Centre for Disease Control says the risk to Australia remains very low. And you're right, the virus does spread from rodent to rodent. But there's a pretty interesting piece from some experts at the University of Queensland out that basically outlining some of the risks there. As for the biosecurity part, evidently, I couldn't, in my very quick search today, see if there was a specific plan for hantavirus, but the Australian Centre for Disease Control says that there is the risk to Australia remains low. I will have a deeper dive for you once I'm off air, Carol, see if I can find anything more detailed for you. But thank you for that question. It's a good one to put through. Now, Jeff in Mergen says, good afternoon. Can someone tell us what the experience of Julie Collins has in the ag sector? When Burke, I think that's Tony Burke you're referring to there, Jeff, was appointed in the Rudd government, he told Landline he had none, but he was willing to learn. I can have a quick look at Julie's, I'm not 100% sure of what her background is. I know we covered it when she was first sworn in, but I can have I'll ask my colleagues in Tasmania. She's an MP from Tasmania, so we can check that out for you. Appreciate you sending the message through, Jeff. And John at Tolga says, good afternoon. Listening to all the comments about the budget, everybody's trying to minimise their tax, but then they want a government handout. Australia exports 85% of the food it produces. John, thanks for your insights. I appreciate it. You can send yours to on 0487 993 222. And Mark has sent a message in from the Downs. Keep up those weathermen, mate. We might get there next week. I'm pushing for you. I am pushing for you, Mark. We'll do our best. I do hope it's a useful time to get a drop if you do. We'll keep an eye on that trough for you. This is the Country Hour. It's 1:45.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Now, a Queensland cotton grower who wanted a drought-proof income decided instead of buying a pub, he'd try something else, making clothes from some of the family crop. Now, that was 34 years ago, and despite farming and fashion challenges, the brand's thriving and bringing business to his country town. Here's Landline's Pip Courtney.
Farmer Sam Colton has two natural homes. In a paddock, keeping an eye on his cotton, and at Gundawindi Cotton Fashion HQ, a business he started nearly 30 years ago.
Got a lovely texture to it.
This 73-year-old is fluent in fashion and farming. By his side is grandson Harry.
It's hard to follow in the footsteps of a man like Sam because he's done so much over his career.
The Coltons haven't always grown cotton. Low wool prices in the 60s prompted a switch to cropping. And in 1976, when a flood left them unable to pay creditors, they switched again.
We went to them and said, listen here, you blokes, we're going to grow cotton. We want you to take a deep breath, lend us some more money, by fertiliser, fuel and bits and pieces, and we're going to grow cotton.
So you bet the house?
We had no choice.
That first cotton crop saved the farm. But Sam grew tired of the unpredictable income caused by droughts.
Back in those days, you know, if you wanted a cash flow, people said you bought a pub. You know what I mean? That's what we needed to value add.
And that's what he did. In 1989, he had some of the family's cotton spun into yarn.
We've got 212 bales spun, enough to make a couple hundred thousand T-shirts.
He supplied a major surfwear brand and then in 1992 created his own. He named it after the town he loves. The business has been so successful, last year he opened its first retail shop. Where else but Gundawindi? On the wall, the first shirt, a reminder of how far Sam's come.
Our family's about the only people in the world that take it from a seed all the way through to a garment. And I know why. So bloody hard.
I've had a couple of the WA. Ooh.
The shop sits alongside a warehouse, offices and a cafe, which Mayor Lawrence Springborg says draws tourists and locals.
He lives and breathes Gundawindi. He just does amazing things in Gundawindi. And I think rural communities around Australia need more Sam Coltons. They just do extraordinary things.
220 retailers and online customers are supplied from here, with two-thirds of sales to urban postcodes. Being headquartered in Gundawindi adds an extra $5 per garment, a cost Sam is happy to carry.
I mean, what do I do with my warehouse crew? Girls have been with me for years. I mean, Gundawindi Post Office gets a hit out of that. So it's the whole town. Industries, if you can do it, have got to be for the people, not just for one person.
Great to see you.
Councillor Julia Spicer says Sam's contribution is invaluable.
Anecdotally, we talk about having lost 50 families in previous droughts, and those families don't come back when it rains. And so being able to have almost drought-proof roles in a rural agricultural community like ours is really important. We're really, really grateful that they've created this beautiful space in downtown Gundawindi.
The new denim range is going to have a cream and a burgundy colour.
Yeah.
appealing. Melbourne-based head designer Michelle Shepherd says Sam is no fashionista.
He doesn't follow fashion. He leaves that up to me and Louise. As long as it's classic and true to the Gundawindi woman, he's always happy. We're never way out.
Sam's idea to run bus tours has brought benefits to the town and cotton farmers for 15 years. 3,500 tourists do the trip every season.
We were starting to lose the trust as farmers to the consumer. The education part of it was so important.
Tour guide Lois Lai says the biggest misunderstanding is about water.
People have an allocation of water which they pay for. Some people aren't aware of that. The other thing is they don't understand that if it hasn't rained, that there isn't an allocation and there isn't water to grow the crop.
You can come to Gundawindi, you can go to the pub for a meal and you can drive out of town and you'll be none the wiser about anything. But if you come on the tour like this, it makes your brain start to tick.
And we're trying to, in a little small way, just show the world or what people that we are. After all, you know, you've been trusting us to feed you three times a day, my family, for the last 100 years. So please listen to us.
Gundawindi farmer and fashion brand owner Sam Coulton there with Landline's Pip Courtney. And you can see more of that story on Landline at 12:30 on Sunday, or catch up anytime on ABC iView. It's 10 to 1, the markets for you very soon. Before that, though, there's a bit of an unseasonal wave of 3-day getting about, and with rain coming too, some of the signs to look for, you'll hear from Vet next.
Guy Montgomery is back with a new assistant.
Sam Campbell, take the job.
What is the job?
The new season of Guy Montgomery's Guy Mont Spelling Bee. Wednesday nights on ABC TV and ABC iView.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour with Callie Buchanan on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Unsurprisingly, probably an unseasonal wave of 3-day sickness is making its way across northwest Queensland. Now, it affects cattle and is spread from biting insects, often brought on by rain. And Huendon vet Libby Harriman says it's quite late in the year to see an outbreak.
3-day, otherwise known as bovine ephemeral fever, it's a virus that's transmitted by mosquitoes and biting midges. So with this little bit of moist weather, we're seeing a resurgence in the biting insects and seeing a wave of 3-day sickness, you know, coming through our region.
And what areas are experiencing that wave?
So we've seen cases around Huendon, you know, right through Muttaburra and sort of further west as well.
Is this a normal time of the year to see that?
Actually, Brooke, it's a little bit later than what we normally see 3-day. It's sort of often at the start of the wet season where we see it. And once those vectors start to rise in populations. But, yeah, we've just got a second wave of it this year. So it's a virus and it's transmitted by, you know, biting insects. And, you know, the more cases we see, the more cases we all see until the insects start to die down again.
And how does it present in cattle?
So the best analogy for 3-day sickness is it's like cattle flu. So it causes a fever and they get aches and pains in their joints. So they lie down, and we call it 3-day sickness because the general case, you know, lasts for about 3 days and then they will often, you know, get over it. Some cattle, usually the heavier bullocks are the ones that succumb the most, and they have trouble, you know, getting back up on their feet and they need some medications and some nursing. There is also a neurological version of 3-day that can get into the spinal cord, and those cattle can become weak and stagger for, you know, the rest of their lives.
And how can grazies manage 3-day sickness?
So as I said, you know, a lot of them, they'll get over in a few days, same as when we have the flu. You lie down for a day or two and you feel better. The ones that do get a more severe version of the illness, we treat with anti-inflammatories. So that's either your meloxicam or your etolfidine are the two ones we use most of. And then they need some good nursing care. So, you know, make sure they've got shade and food and water close at hand. And, yeah, so the heavier ones, you know, we may need to lift them so they don't get what we call compartment syndrome in their legs, and they get pins and needles and they can't actually get up.
And when should people know when to contact their vet?
My general rule of thumb, Brooke, is if you can treat them without them trying to chase you or run away, they need treating. There is a vaccine available, but unfortunately, your vaccines, you know, once you're seeing it in the paddock, you possibly are a bit too late, but you can give them two shots 2 weeks apart when you know it's coming to get that immunity working faster. And, this morning we had a lady come in with, a precious potty cow that was sick, and that's something that's a bit more higher value that needs treating. If you had a, high value bull, it's probably worth treating. Your steers and your heifers in the paddock, seeing, a couple down, they will usually, be fine over a day or two, but it's important to just check them every day and make sure that they're getting up. If they've been down for more than 2 days, they probably deserve a little bit of help to get them back on their feet.
Huenden vet Libby Harriman speaking to Brooke Tindall. Keep an eye out for 3 day getting around northwest Queensland. It's 5 to 1. Let's head to the markets. Another big yarding at Dalby. Here's Trevor Hess.
Good afternoon. The number of cattle penned at Dalby today remained virtually unchanged at 6,765 head. Buyer representation across all classes was good and all were active in the market. Prices generally across all categories were firm to dearer. Heavyweight yearling steers to feed at the time of this interim report have sold to a market 17 cents better. Medium and heavyweight yearling heifers to feed improved by 10 and over 20 in places. Plain condition cows to restockers averaged 10 dearer, and cows to processors held on to the improvements experienced the previous sale. Heavyweight yearling steers to feed made to 504 and averaged 472. Medium weight yearling heifers to feed averaged 404, a few pens reaching 458. Heavy grown steers to exports processors made to an isolated 468. Medium weight plain condition cows sold to restockers at an average of 300, sales to 316. Heavyweight three score cows to processors average 337. Best of the cows made to 378 to average 368. Heavyweight bulls made to 407, some returning $4,499 a head. This has been Trevor Hess from MLH National Livestock Reporting Service.
And over to the Charters Towers Selling Centre with Mick Kingham.
The numbers increased slightly to 1,421 mixed quality cattle. The number of prime cattle reduced to near 500 and were not as good as the previous week, while young cattle comprised of one good the northern line of young males, supported by small local lines. The regular buyer panel included one southern processor and one live exporter, with opportunity restockers. However, one feeder buyer was absent. Demand was much improved this week, with active buyer participation throughout, with most categories improving in price relative to quality. Prime yearlings improved 25 to 30 cents. Limited numbers of prime grown cattle saw increases of 10 to 55, and heavy cows lifted 20 to 26. A large sample of young weaner steers met strong restocker demand, selling to 428, average 389. Similar heifers reached 308, average 280. Light yearling steers made to 354, while steers above 330 kilos to trade sold from 336 to 352. A limited number of yearling heifers above 330 kilos ranged from 338 to 344, an isolated sale to 352. Fewer good quality prime grown steers reached 364. Steers to feed sold from 348 to 366. Prime grown heifers sold from 280 to 340. Medium weight three score cows sold to 308, average 286. Prime heavyweight cows topped at 320, average from 302 to 315. Heavy bulls made to 358.
And at the Gracemere Selling Centre, here's Richard Thompson.
Good afternoon, listeners. CQLX Gracemere agents penned a reduced number this week again, with 1,428 on hand, 813 less than last sale. The yarding's good average quality throughout. To date, prime cows, bulls and the best condition trade heifers have all improved. The usual buyer gallery is present for the processor types, however feeder and restock buyers are not as well represented. Grown steers and bullocks to processors have averaged 368 to 383. Those to feed sold to average 370 to 417 cents. Trade heifers have averaged 365 to 369 for the best condition pens, and heavy four-score cows averaged 329, sold to a top of 342. Heavy bulls averaged 359 cents a kilo, another improvement on last week's sale. This has been Richard Thompson for the National Livestock Reporting Service of the MLA from Gracemere.
And that's it for the Queensland Country Hour today. Thanks for your company and thanks to everybody who sent through a text message. Now, we will have the opposition's response to the budget tonight. We'll bring you the details of, I think it'll be Matt Canavan's first as leader. I don't think he gives it though. I think it's the Shadow Treasurer. However, we will bring you the details of the response to the budget in tomorrow's program. We'll also keep digging into the detail Very interested to learn more about proposed changes for the work, the holiday visa maker, working holiday visa program. That's we'll keep looking into that for you. In the meantime, you can get the latest ABC News right now and you can tune into your local rural report at 6:15 in the morning. I'm Callie Buchanan. It's my pleasure to spend the afternoon with you. I'll be back on your radio at midday tomorrow. Right now, it is 1:00.